Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
We're currently in the middle of a deep dive into the life of Lyndon Johnson. So far, we've covered his ascent to the Senate and the stolen election of 1948, as well as the details of how Johnson somehow made his way onto the 1960 Democratic Party presidential ticket at the last minute. We've now reached the part of the LBJ series where we're about to get into some of the more infamous and interesting characters in the JFK assassination conspiracy lore. Lyndon Johnson was closely connected to two men who would go on to face legal repercussions for their business deals, Bobby Baker and Billy Sol Estes. In this episode, we begin to explore Johnson's business dealings, including the radio station he bought, his ties with the mafia, and his close relationship with Bobby Baker.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
That's what this is all about.
Dallas police this morning resumed custody. The man they have formally charged with the assassination of President Kennedy.
I'm just a patsy.
The man is Lee Oswald.
Was Oswald acting alone, or was he a member of a conspiracy? Commission answers, he acted alone.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. We know that Lyndon Johnson was not from a wealthy background. He worked briefly as a school teacher and then became involved in politics. Despite Johnson's career in public service, he somehow accumulated $14 million as of 1964, according to Time Magazine's expose that year. So how then did the public servant Lyndon Johnson end up with the equivalent of $144 million in today's money? Johnson's business dealings began in 1943 when he bought Austin-based radio station KTBC. Before Johnson bought it, the station had been struggling financially because of its weak radio signal and because it was limited to daytime broadcasting only. When the prior owners of the station applied for a stronger signal, the Federal Communications Commission denied their requests multiple times. The FCC also denied the application of another purchaser who offered to buy the station for $50,000. Johnson, who was a supporter of FDR, had a friend and fellow New Dealer, the leader of the FCC, Clifford Durr. Lyndon's wife, Lady Bird, even asked Durr for his advice on whether she should buy the KTBC radio station. Lady Bird told Durr that Austin needed more liberal voices on the air. Durr, the chair of the FCC, agreed with her that she should move forward. The Johnsons, under Lady Bird's name, then acquired the KTBC radio station for the discounted price of $17,500, That's a pretty good deal considering that the FCC denied the application of another purchaser who offered to buy the station for $50,000. Immediately after the Johnsons bought the station, the FCC changed its position and approved several applications for expanded reach within 3 weeks of when the Johnsons took over. The prior owners spent years having those same applications denied, but LBJ was successful in expanding the station's geographic reach and securing FCC approval for 24-hour broadcasting. By 1945, the station was approved to increase its power 5 times the wattage that it had before, expanding the reach of the station to 63 counties. The revenue of the station grew almost ninefold, from $2,600 a month before the Johnsons owned it to $22,700 a month just 4 years later. In 1952, KTBC was granted the right to broadcast television over Channel 7. This single channel, which was the only VHF channel approved in Austin, contracted to carry programs from all three major networks, CBS, ABC, and NBC. For a period of time, KTBC had an effective monopoly on television in the Texas Capitol, one that did not exist anywhere else in the country. Johnson would go on to use the advertising of the station as a way to funnel kickbacks to himself. As journalist Holland McCombs concluded, to get Johnson's help, quote, "You got to do business with KTBC. If you'd advertise on the station, Lyndon would sign your recommendation letter." Another way Johnson made money was straight-up, old-fashioned political bribery. Gulf Oil lobbyist Claude Wild Jr. testified to the Securities and Exchange Commission that in 1961, just after Johnson was elected vice president, Gulf Oil gave Johnson $50,000 for his personal use. Wild said that he personally delivered the money in cash in plain envelopes to people associated with Johnson's campaign, like John Connolly. The Gulf Oil bribe was far from the only one that Johnson received. According to historian Robert Caro, John Connolly and Ed Clark regularly took envelopes stuffed with large amounts of cash to Washington inside the breast pockets of their suit jackets. The contributions were then given to Johnson to decide whether to keep the money himself or give it to his campaign. LBJ was also on the take from the mafia. The payoffs were made by John Halfin, who ran a gambling syndicate in Houston under mob boss Carlos Marcello. Halfin was prosecuted for tax fraud in 1954. During that trial, the issue of Halfin's payouts came up, but Halfin refused to say who he had been paying off. However, Halfin later acknowledged that he had given Lyndon Johnson $50,000 a year for 10 years. According to Halfin, in return for this $500,000 sum, LBJ, quote, "repeatedly killed anti-rackets legislation, watered down bills that could not be defeated, and curbed congressional investigations of the mob." Similarly, during the bribery trial of former Senator Daniel Brewster, his aide, Jack Sullivan, testified that in 1964, he saw Senator Brewster and Teamsters boss Jimmy Hoffa speaking in private at a party. Shortly after that, Brewster told Sullivan that Jimmy Hoffa had asked him to take $100,000 in cash to then-President Johnson through his aide, Cliff Carter. Sullivan testified that he saw Teamster lobbyist Sid Zagri bring a suitcase full of money to Senator Brewster. After that, Sullivan went with Brewster to take the suitcase to Cliff Carter. The purpose of the bribe was to get Johnson's help with blocking Hoffa's jury tampering and pension fund fraud, which was not successful because Hoffa was ultimately convicted. As soon as LBJ began his career in the Senate, he quickly established a close relationship with 20-year-old Senate page Bobby Baker. Johnson reached out proactively to work with Baker because, as Johnson put it, Baker, quote, knew where all the bodies were buried in the Senate. The two men were so close that Baker named two of his children Lyndon and Linda, both spelled with Y's. On Capitol Hill, Baker was known as Little Lyndon. Baker would even drink LBJ's cocktails at receptions to test them to make sure that they weren't too strong so that Johnson didn't get drunk. When Johnson became Senate Majority Leader in 1955, he hired Baker as his secretary. One of Baker's jobs in that role was to decide who would receive campaign funds and fancy official trips. Senators could travel free of charge to England, France, Germany, or Japan, but the sole decider of who got to go on what trips was Lyndon Johnson. Johnson and Baker used those perks of the job to encourage senators to vote how LBJ wanted. When Johnson became vice president, Baker maintained the position of secretary to the majority leader. During his time in that position, Baker's net worth increased from $10,000 to $2.1 million, all while he was on a salary of about $19,000 a year. The big picture when we talk about Bobby Baker is that he's getting all of his leverage and power from his relationship with Lyndon Johnson. There's not an obvious paper trail for every transaction, but the implication is clear. Bobby Baker was almost certainly providing LBJ with a piece of the action on many, if not all, of his deals. Another benefit to being secretary to the majority leader was the power to award some government contracts. At first, Baker shook down vending machine companies for fees in exchange for him securing the machine locations. Later, Baker started his own vending business called Serve You Corporation, which placed and serviced vending machines in factories that were doing business with the government. This was at a time when the vending business was booming and most companies did not have cafeterias. Baker's business partner was his and LBJ's neighbor, Fred Black Jr., an extremely well-connected defense industry lobbyist. By 1963, ServU was grossing millions of dollars per year and had a near monopoly on soft drink, candy, and cigarette sales at manufacturing plants related to military contracts. One of the businesses where Baker helped to place vending machines was Capital Vending Company, owned by Ralph Hill. In 1962, Baker charged Hill an upfront fee of $5,600 to help him get a vending contract for an airplane parts manufacturer, Melpar. When Baker insisted that the fee was supposed to be paid annually, not just one time, Hill refused to pay it. Eventually, Hill sued Baker for $300,000 after Hill's contract was canceled and a company owned by Baker replaced his vending machines at the Melpar plant. While this lawsuit was settled out of court, it came to the attention of the Senate and eventually led to Baker's conviction and imprisonment. On top of doling out campaign funds and vacations to senators and grifting off of prime vending locations, Baker also got involved in solving a problem in Haiti for Clint Murchison Jr.'s meatpacking operation. Murchison's company, Hampco, failed to pass the sanitation requirements of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which meant that it couldn't export meat to the U.S. or Puerto Rico. Baker was able to arrange for a reinspection of Hampco. This time, they passed, which meant that they were able to sell their meat to Puerto Rico and the U.S. Hampco paid kickbacks to Baker to the tune of about $30,000 a year. While Lyndon Johnson's name does not appear in any of the documents, it's unlikely that Bobby Baker could have procured the reversal of a sanitation ban and secured a new export license from the USDA all on his own. This is especially true given that Murchison was a longtime financial supporter of Johnson's campaigns. In the early 1960s, Bobby Baker got into the motel development business for the first time with a new project called The Carousel, which was on the beach in Ocean City, Maryland. In the spring of 1962, just before the carousel was set to open, Baker's partner in the project, Alfred Novak, died from an apparent but not confirmed suicide just before a huge northeaster storm caused serious damage to the carousel. These twin calamities required more funds to be raised. Baker was able to get another loan for the project from his friends Ed Levinson, a Las Vegas casino operator, and Benji Siegelbaum, a Miami investor and gambler. When the motel opened on July 22, 1962, the guest of honor was Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who, according to Life magazine, appeared amid, quote, "a bevy of lush and scantily dressed beauties as hostesses." This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Hey everybody, Matt Crumpton here. When I'm not researching, writing, or recording, one of my favorite ways to relax is with federally legal THC from Mood.com. This stuff doesn't come from a lab. It's pesticide-free and grown on American farms. You can get 20% off your first order using the code JFK. One of my go-tos is the functional gummies from Mood.com. These gummies only take 15 minutes to feel the effects, and you can choose all kinds of different moods, from creativity to pain relief to just plain old relaxation. Everything comes right to your door and is discreetly labeled. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, you also get 20% off of your first order using code JFK. So head on over to Mood.com and find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Remember, use code JFK for a 20% discount. Another project started by Bobby Baker was the Quorum Club, a private gentlemen's club located on the second floor of the Carroll Arms Hotel, which was just two blocks away from the Capitol. Politicians would be accosted by the press at the public bar. That's why, according to Baker, the club's membership, quote, "was comprised of senators, congressmen, lobbyists, Capitol Hill staffers, and other well-connecteds who wanted to enjoy their drinks, meals, poker games, and shared secrets in private accommodations. In reality, the FBI had bugged the private lounge, and Baker himself was making his own tapes of conversations at certain tables. We know that LBJ already worked hand in hand with J. Edgar Hoover to weaponize any dirt that Hoover collected against their mutual enemies. With Bobby Baker collecting his own dirt in a place where people thought they could speak freely, he and his boss, LBJ, gained even more leverage. Baker made sure that there were always beautiful women at the club. He introduced one of these women, Ellen Romesh, to President Kennedy. Romesh became one of the several women Kennedy had affairs with while he was in the White House. Ellen Romesh would later be a problem for the Kennedys and a lifeline for Lyndon Johnson. In addition to LBJ's relationship with the Marcello crime family through John Halfin, Bobby Baker served as another primary bridge to organized crime. Baker obtained casino contracts with the Intercontinental Hotel System on behalf of Meyer Lansky associates Cliff Jones and Ed Levinson. As an example of how interconnected the study of the JFK assassination is, Jones and Levinson were the owners of the Havana Hilton before Fidel Castro came to power and expropriated private property. As noted earlier, Levinson was one of the mafia-connected financiers of the Carousel Motel who Baker turned to when more funds were needed. Levinson also helped Baker finance his vending machine business. In addition to working with Meyer Lansky, Ed Levinson was also an associate of Chicago mob boss Sam Giancana. Lyndon Johnson's close friend and neighbor was lobbyist Irving Davidson. According to author John Davis, Davidson was the principal lobbyist who helped Carlos Marcello access the agencies of the federal government. Davidson also represented the CIA and the Teamsters Union as a lobbyist. And Davidson worked with Bobby Baker and Clint Murchison on fixing the Haitian meat deal with the USDA. This guy was everywhere. Davidson was also friendly with his neighbor, J. Edgar Hoover. As Davidson put it, quote, "I'm a great admirer of Mr. Hoover, and I did have access. We used to have parties before the Redskin games, and Hoover always came to them. He was a darn good friend. I lived around the corner from him, three quarters of a block. I'd go over and say hello to him and Clyde Tolson." I know we've mentioned the idea that Hoover and Johnson were neighbors, but now that we know the connections that all of these men had, it's even wilder that they lived within a stone's throw of each other. We've got J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI who denied the existence of the mafia. Then we've got Johnson, who, as we already mentioned, had been paid off by Carlos Marcello. Then there's Irving Davidson, the super lobbyist for both the CIA and some mob bosses. On top of that, another neighbor to this crew was Fred Black Jr., a defense industry lobbyist who was Baker's partner in the vending machine business. Black was also a close friend of mobster Johnny Rosselli. In fact, Fred Black and Johnny Rosselli were so close that Black warned Rosselli to get out of Miami the night before he was murdered in July of 1976, which raises the question, what else did Fred Black know? In September of 1963, 2 months before President Kennedy would be assassinated, Bobby Baker's wheeling and dealing was put under the spotlight by Republican Senator John Williams, who got a tip about Baker from none other than Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, who said that Baker was surrounding himself with unsavory characters and conflicts of interest. RFK even assigned a Justice Department lawyer to serve as an intermediary to the Republican Senate staff so that the DOJ and the Kennedys would be made aware of documents about Lyndon Johnson's financial dealings with Baker. According to Burkett Van Kirk, who at the time was the chief counsel for the Republicans on the Rules Committee, Bobby Kennedy's motive in sharing this information with Senator Williams was, quote, to get rid of Johnson, to dump him. I am as sure of that as I am that the sun comes up in the east. Newsday also reported in October of 1963 that, quote, the Justice Department started an investigation of Baker as a means of embarrassing Johnson and eliminating him from the Democratic ticket next year. At this time, Lyndon Johnson, who was aware of Bobby Kennedy's ploy, fell back on the same tried and true tactics that had gotten him to the vice presidency in the first place. Johnson reached out to his old friend, J. Edgar Hoover, and encouraged Hoover to confront the Kennedys about President Kennedy's affair with Ellen Romish, one of the girls from the Quorum Club who joined the president for naked pool parties at the White House. Johnson tried to distance himself from Baker when the scandals broke. He even said that Baker was, quote, just an employee around here. Contrary to what Johnson said, he was still in touch with Baker. In a breach of normal protocol, on August 21st, 1963, Johnson had a documented meeting on the books with Bobby Baker and Fred Black. In addition, Baker used Johnson's old buddy and 1948 election lawyer, Abe Fortas, as his lawyer to defend against the Senate investigation. Johnson, who had not spoken to Fortas with frequency before the scandal, talked to Fortas on the phone almost daily in October of 1963 and visited Fortas twice, including once in his home after being driven there in a borrowed car by Lady Bird. Johnson's calls to Fortas ended in November, when Fortas was brought in to work directly under Johnson full-time with a goal of shutting down the congressional investigations. If JFK had so many other girlfriends, what was the big deal with Ellen Romish? The Quorum Club hostess was born in East Germany and was rumored to have been some kind of a spy. This led the FBI to investigate her. On July 12, 1963, an FBI memo concluded that the investigation did not substantiate the claims that Romish was a spy, or even that she had, quote, high-level sex contacts. Given that we know that Romish did, in fact, have an affair with the President of the United States, it appears that this FBI report is a whitewash. Even though the FBI formally determined that Romish was not a spy, the context here is important. Around the same time as the Ellen Romish scandal was in the news, across the ocean, the British government had just gone through a similar scandal known as the Profumo affair. John Profumo, the British Secretary of War, lied about having an affair with a 19-year-old model who happened to also be sleeping with a Soviet naval attaché, which would be a major security risk. The Profumo affair resulted in the resignation of Prime Minister Harold Macmillan around the same time, in October of 1963. Americans were wondering whether the Ellen Romish scandal would end up the same way for President Kennedy. In late October, Bobby Kennedy had Romish deported back to Germany. Still, stories about the Romish affair were in newspapers, and the Bobby Baker investigation was ongoing in the Senate. At this point, Bobby Kennedy, the man who had put the wheels in motion on the Senate investigation of Bobby Baker, had to go with his hat in his hand to J. Edgar Hoover, the same man who Bobby's nemesis, LBJ, was relying on to clean up the Bobby Baker mess. This led to Hoover having a secret meeting on October 28th with Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield and Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen. During that meeting, Hoover explained that there were large numbers of senators implicated in the Quorum Club sex scandal on both sides of the aisle. Based on that logic, Hoover encouraged the Senate leaders to shut down the investigation into Romish. And sure enough, by that afternoon, the Senate canceled its plans to investigate Ellen Romish. With Hoover's help, the sexual scandal angle of the Bobby Baker investigation was gone, but the financial side of the inquiry remained in place. 2 weeks before JFK was assassinated, Life magazine featured a cover story with a picture of Bobby Baker and a headline that said, quote, "Capital buzzes over stories of misconduct in high places. The Bobby Baker bombshell." There were many possible transactions that could have demonstrated Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson's lawlessness, but one seemingly small shakedown of an insurance salesman would draw a clear line to LBJ on the record. On the day of the assassination, literally at the moment President Kennedy was being shot and while the Parkland doctors were working on him, Don Reynolds was testifying to the Senate Rules Committee about Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson. Reynolds laid out how Johnson demanded kickbacks on Reynolds' life insurance commissions in the form of paying for $1,200 in advertising on Johnson's radio station and a Magnavox stereo. Reynolds described how the stereo was selected by Lady Bird from a catalog provided by Bobby Baker. He even provided records showing that the stereo was delivered to the Johnson home. Don Reynolds also testified about Baker skimming commissions on other transactions, like his vending contracts and construction contracts for major projects, such as the Rayburn House office building and the football stadium that would later be known as RFK Stadium. For the stadium, Reynolds told the Senate that contractor Matt McCloskey bribed Baker and Johnson to get the contract and then increased the cost of the stadium by $14 million to help cover the difference. The details of this transaction were never established before President Johnson was able to close down the investigation. Reynolds also said that he witnessed a suitcase full of money that Bobby Baker described as a $100,000 payoff to Johnson for securing the TFX contract, a saga that we'll cover in a future episode. In the November 22, 1963 edition of Life magazine, which was distributed a few days before the publication date, the cover page said, quote, "The Bobby Baker case. U.S. Senate writhes as nation focuses on a mess involving one of its own." According to the editor of Life magazine at the time, James Wagenvoord, an even more damaging story about Johnson and Baker had been written, but was pulled from publication at the last minute. Wagenvoord said about this article, quote, "On publication, Johnson would have been finished and off the 64 ticket and would probably have been facing prison time. On Kennedy's death, research files and all numbered copies of the nearly print-ready draft were gathered up by my boss and shredded." The issue of Life magazine that was supposed to put the spotlight on the corruption of Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson instead focused on the Zapruder film. Next time on Solving JFK, we continue to analyze the life and relationships of Lyndon Johnson as we turn our attention to Billy Sol Estes and Mack Wallace. If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, visit solvingjfkpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com for more information.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Hey, I'm Dr. Z, and I'm a neurosurgeon. So that means long hours, early rounds, late nights, and everything in between. And through it all, I wear Figs. Because they're built for what I do. Through the chaos, through the hours, and through whatever the day throws at me, they do their job so I can do mine. They're comfortable when it counts and functional when I need them the most. So where do you wear your Figs? On shift, on call, on the couch in the break room listening to this podcast? Wherever it is, they fit right in. And now listeners of this podcast can get 15% off their first order. Just head to wearfigs.com and use code FIGSRX at checkout. That's wearfigs.com, code FIGSRX.